Hey, everybody, it's Mark Patterson. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Before we get to today's wonderful guest, I do want to remind everybody to go to my website, www.markpattersonnfl.com. I've got another climb coming up in September, which you can check out. Headed to France, headed to Switzerland for Mount Blanc and the Matterhorn. So that's number one. Number two, also on my website, you can find the amazing Emmy-winning Best Picture, Searching for the Summit, the NFL did on my expedition to Mount Everest last year. It was pretty epic. And so go in, check that out. And then also we've got over 250 podcasts now, which is a heck of a lot of podcasts. Appreciate the love. If you went to Apple to give a ratings and review, helps elevate the popularity of the show so we can help inspire others. And always, I continue to raise money for Amelia's Everest, my vehicles through Higher Ground here in Sun Valley, Los Angeles, and New York. It's all about trying to empower others, and that's what life is all about. So on that note, let me jump into today's rock star guest. His name is Terry Ahoya. I don't think I said it. It's a whole lot. Yeah. How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. No, hey, I appreciate it. So let's back up. So I met you 2 years ago now. I had just come off Mount Everest, and I descended of all places. I went from the highest peak in the world to the lowest point on earth in Greenville, Mississippi. And I know that you've been a part of Steve Azar's wonderful golf Delta Blues tournament for the last several years. You've been a big supporter of his, which is awesome. But the reason why you were there and the reason why I was there is because Steve likes to pull in different people who've done notable things. In your case, you were on the U.S. ski team many years ago. And, you know, you had your time, just like I had my time in the NFL. And I want to know what that was like, you know, skiing so many years ago. And we all transitioned through life. I know you're not involved in the ski industry anymore, but at least you get to kind of relive your glory to some level at these golf tournaments that both you and I were at.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Steve and I have known each other for about 20 years. We met at a Gino Toretta's event down in Miami. And we all do events. You know, I have an event. I've had an event in Marquette, Michigan with Steve Mariucci and Tom Mitchell. The three of us co-hosted. And Steve came to that one. But so we've just been doing events and see each other all the time. And I was actually on his tour when he was with Bob Seger. I helped to get that going with management. So anyways, that's where we met at Steve's. So, you know, I guess we're talking about beginning of my career.
Yeah, I mean, let's go back and so you're a guy who grew up in Michigan, and you know, when I've played in Michigan before, back in the day, I was fortunate to play against Michigan there, and we won and we beat them. Nice. But as I look out through the landscape of the great state of Michigan and the Upper Peninsula and all these different places which I've been to, I'm not seeing a whole lot of mountains. There might be, you know, elevated bluffs or whatever you want to call those, but not a whole lot of mountains, but the fact is that's where you grew up, and you're a guy that would ultimately make the U.S. Olympic team. You were on there for 3 years, 82 to 84. You got injured, and then you skied beyond that. But you know, how does somebody from an area like Michigan, like I grew up in the state of Washington, yeah, and there's all kinds of mountains up there. I'm currently living in Sun Valley. We got the most amazing mountain. You've been here. Sure. You skied Sun Valley. How does a guy from Michigan make it all the way to the Olympics?
You know,
the Olympic team.
Backtrack for a bit. I didn't make the Olympics. I got hurt before Sarajevo. I was ranked third in slalom, so I was going, but yeah, behind Phil and Steve Mayer. And so, but anyways, a couple of parallels between Steve and I is I wondered where his music came from. And when he visited my hometown, and I showed him this little bump that I grew up on, a rope toe skiing, he couldn't believe that I did what I did. And then when I went to Delta Soul, I got him. I figured out how he writes, because where he's from, the soulfulness of the, you know, Mississippi Delta. And so anyway.
No, Terry, just to clarify, you're talking about Steve Azar right now, correct?
Sure. Yes, I am.
Because you bled in Steve Mayer and Phil Mayer, which, by the way, they're from this great state of Washington, right? Yep. And yes, they grew up in a little teeny tiny ski resort called White Bass.
Yeah, Yakima is the town they're from.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
And a side bit, Cooper Kupp's dad played with Phil in high school football. So
Cooper Kupp's killing it right now.
I know, in the NFL for the Rams. I emailed Phil and I said, did you play with his dad? He goes, hell yeah, we're good friends. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah,
cool.
So back to my beginning of my skiing, I guess my mother started me as a young skier, probably three. And I grew up on a little small hill that not even grew up on. It was a park and people were sledding. And my dad took some of his old shoes, cut the toes off and put them on the skis. And that's what I had for skis.
That's awesome.
I really would have done a spiral fracture if I'd have fell, but I couldn't fall because that would have hurt. But anyway, so from there, I moved to, Cliffs Ridge, Marquette Mountain, which is in Marquette, and then Iron Mountain, Pine Mountain, two very small, probably, what are they? Probably 300 vertical feet, maybe.
So when you say Marquette, you're now talking about Wisconsin?
Marquette, the UP, Upper Peninsula.
UP.
That's Northern Michigan. That's where Mooch played football as a quarterback. And Tom Izzo, his best friend as a childhood, played basketball there. So Marquette is kind of the Northern Michigan is the college. But so I advanced at every level. And I think the first race my mother took me to was a place called Indian Head Mountain. And I'd been on this little hill at Gladstone, where I'm from, up till then. And this is my first race, and it's an organized race called, USSA. And I got to Indian Head Mountain, and this course had like three different headwalls. And I went, I can't do this. And I probably fell 10 times. I don't remember exactly how many times. But every one of those experiences as I kept going were a new experience for me, because I'm from a middle-class family. And, I ended up having some success at 16 and made the junior nationals and was on my first airplane ride going to the junior nationals in Squaw Valley. And so I think that a lot of my drive came from all these new experiences that I wouldn't have if I wasn't an athlete. And so, wouldn't have the opportunity to experience. And so when I got I'll go back to Squaw Valley. So they made the junior nationals at 16, get to Squaw Valley. I see all these kids I've been reading about, in Ski Racing Magazine, all this stuff. And I'm going, I can't do this. No way. Not possible. And I guess, if eventually that kind of went away, even though it was still a doubt in my mind, because I'm from a small mountain, like I said. And then I moved to Vail in 80, when I was 18, joined Ski Club Vail, which is where a lot of kids are outcome. That's where Lindsey Vonn came out of, and Lindsey Vonn started in Buck Hill, Minnesota, with a coach I know, Eric Seiler. So she came from a tiny little hill, then became one of the world's best downhillers, So anyway, so it got to Vail, and that was another new experience, living in a town on my own and trying to make, and I was a member of Ski Club Vail, and I started winning races. And it was my second year at Ski Club Vail, I won 10 slaloms in a row on the circuit. There's a Eldoro Cup. And so I was beating nationally ranked kids all the time. And
how did you, just a sec, how did you support yourself? So there's kind of two questions laced in here. Number one is, I've been skiing for all my life. Okay. Mm-hmm. And obviously my main path that I went on was football from college to the NFL, obviously started in high school. But I do know that in between during the winter, when I wasn't playing football, I'd be up skiing, and it could always create a very much of a party atmosphere. Right. And that's just kind of the culture of skiing. And so there's two questions. One, how did you support yourself? That's one. And two is how did you stay focused on the end game, which is to go to the Olympics, while putting yourself in a culture that it's good times, on the mountain, drinking beers and all that stuff. Well, at 18 years old.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting because our family had a concrete business, ready-mix concrete. So that's a summer business. And it's not so good in the winter in Michigan. So my dad pretty much put me through every construction experience there was. I worked in an asphalt crew for one summer. And I remember, because this is how focused I was, between asphalt coming to the truck, and I was a loop man, they call it, and you're moving on the highway, I'd go down in the ditch and do sit-ups And these guys, a part of the crew, you know, said, "What's going on? Are you crazy?" I said, "Yeah, I'm a skier. That's what I do." So I raised, that's how I made some money to support what I was doing. My parents didn't have a lot of money, so it was not. And skiing's not a very easy sport to get into with no money, that's for sure. Yeah. But I guess I worked almost every summer in some phase of construction to support what I was going to do in the winter. Aside from that, I went to Mount Hood probably 10 years in a row for a month of summer. And so then I go back to work. But Mount Hood is where the glaciers are. That's where everybody trains. And so,
for all the people that don't know, Mount Hood is in Oregon. And like you said, it's a mountain, big old glacier. And there's actually there's a chair that goes up and down, and people go there to train.
That's where all the teams go now. Back in the day, there was just a few. But I guess so. So supporting myself is how I did that. What was the second part of it?
And the second part was just, you know, how did you stay focused on the end goal of going to Olympics while being in a party atmosphere?
Well, that's interesting because I was uber focused. So even living in Vail, Colorado, which is a tough town to live in, like just like you said, not unlike Sun Valley. And so I was winning all these races, and I still did not get the notice from the U.S. ski team. You know, I beat all their kids, all the junior nationals. I beat everybody for a whole year straight. And I went home to Michigan in the summer and told my dad I'm going to turn professional because there was good money out there. ABC had the tour then, Bob Beatty, who put the tour together. And it was that's why I ski raced, because I saw Joseph Odermatt racing when I was 12 years old on ABC or whoever it was, you know. That's what really, you know, and I told Bob Beatty this many times before he passed. I said, "Beats, you're the guy, you're the reason I was a ski racer, man, because you had ABC television, Wild World of Sports, and that was the thing that drove me." So my second year in Vail, beating everybody, I got kind of bummed out about it because what do I got to do? I just beat everybody all year. And so I told my father I was going to turn pro. There was a bunch of money out there for me. Rosino was offering a bunch of money with Solomon and, you know, different sponsors. And so they said, "Now let's make one effort to see if we can get you to a ski team camp." And so my dad called the ski team or wrote him a letter and said, "This is terrible." So they invited me. And I remember it very well. So I flew into Portland because it was training at up at Mount Hood. And all these kids from the East, you know, and I showed up like in a dress shirt and suit or something, because I didn't know. So we get to the mountain, and I beat everybody by 2 seconds in time trials. The whole week I was there, so they had to take me. They had to take me to Europe, you know. And I remember coach was named Conrad Rickenbach, and I came down, and I had reps telling me I was winning by 2 seconds, like from Dina Star, the guys that I knew forever. I said, "Man, you're kicking everybody's butt. And it's awesome because they're all behind me." And so Conrad just looked at me when I came down on one of my runs and said, "Guess I got to take it to Europe." And still with a smirk on his mouth, you know. And then I went down to the dry land training. You'll appreciate this because as a football player, I did 2-a-days as a high school player, you know. So we had to have certain criteria, run the mile in a certain amount of time, you know, different parts of, you know, physical fitness. And I remember I did the mile and I went behind the bleachers and threw up. And all these kids from the East, right? They're going, "He's just throwing up." And I came back, said, "What's next?" That's what we do, right? Yeah. 2-a-days. And awesome. So that also was part of, you know, probably one reason they wanted to take me. And so once I got there to the team, I guess one thing that really inspired me was Phil and Steve Mayer. Watching them work, what they did. Phil was the first guy at breakfast at 6 a.m. with his ski boots on. I mean, now we're not skiing for a couple hours yet, but he's got his boots on. He's ready to go. We're going up on the glacier in Italy or somewhere, wherever we were. And so I guess more than anything, those two really made me see what's out there and how to work at it and be straight about, you know, not partying, getting rest and all that stuff. So I guess they were an impact. And I guess, you know, from there on, you just try to, you have to stay focused because you're doing a sport that you're going very fast. And so there's not a lot of room for partying, especially when training camp, you know. And so I'm sure you agree with that from the NFL standpoint. You know, it's serious business when you're in there. You get injured very easily in football as well as skiing. So
So that was it. Yeah. So I think when you are in the sport of racing on skis, it's not if, it's when you're going to crash. Okay. And that's just the way it is. And you're crashing at very high rates of speed. In 1984, after being on the Olympic team
I wasn't on the team though. I know that.
I've said
it. Yeah, I raced in Sarajevo the year before in 83. So yeah, I raced.
Yeah, so the U.S. ski team, but that leads then to the Olympics, you know, ultimately. Sure. But you're on the U.S. ski team, and that's your goal to go. And now you suffer a pretty tough injury. And now you got to battle back. And, you know, once people go through that, we've seen this with Lindsey Vonn. We've seen this with many other people where, you know, they get blown out, their knees, they're all over. It's, you know, the classic wild, wide world of sports. Sure. You mentioned this before, but when they're talking about the thrill of victory to the agony of defeat, and the guy flips off, you know, the jump and crashes, and, you know, it's hardcore, right?
Yeah.
And so for you, what was that? Like, how devastating was that? And then what was the road back?
Well, so backtracking, I was going to talk about this. I was in the zone twice in my career as a skier. And the zone, meaning everything was in slow motion. The first time was at Mount Hood when I beat all those kids in all those trials. I was I didn't think I was going that fast. That's what I experienced as a zone. So then we went to Europe for, you know, the next year or that season. And I was so on my game. I started like 100th in a race, a rope cup race, you know, maybe 99. I can't remember, but starting order way back. And I came down and I was top five both days. And I thought for sure I was going slow. And from there on, I was skiing every race. It felt like it was in slow motion for a month or so. And we flew from Zurich. This is interesting because you're from Seattle, right? We flew from Zurich to Seattle. And we parked our buses, our vans outside of our hotel. We were going to the U.S. Nationals at Mission Ridge. Wenatchee.
Yeah.
And so all of our stuff got ripped off. Everything was gone from our vans at the Red Roof in Seattle Airport. You know, so we ended up, you know, getting new stuff or whatever. And we went to up to Wenatchee. And at that time, Mark, I knew I couldn't be beaten slalom. I was in the zone still, and it was happening. And the first run, the U.S. National, I won. I was in first place. And the second run, I'm not going to lose. I know that. I feel that good about it. And I got my ski kind of just caught, not caught even. Just I think that, in fact, I was skiing so well. This is crazy to say, but I was skiing so well at the time. I overpowered my knee because my quad and my, you know, hamstrings, it just tore up it blew out my ACL in mid-turn. I did not crash, nothing. I can see that all the time now in the NFL when a guy does a little tweak to his knee and they try to come off and go, it's okay. Yeah. Like, that's a torn ACL because it happened. So that happened. I blew it up and I thought to myself, man, I don't think it's that bad, you know? And so we went from Seattle or from Wenatchee down to Tahoe. And it was a big 10-foot snowstorm, and I couldn't get from Squaw Valley to Lake Tahoe to have my knee operated by Dr. Stebbin or even looked at. And I still kept thinking it was good because I had like a week before I was able to even get to the doctor. But anyways, I had surgery, and it was an ACL, and it's tough to take, man, when you've been working your ass off to get where I got, you know, and here it is. And the only good thing that came out of it is probably that I wouldn't have married my wife if I would have went to the Olympics in 84. You know, so, and I've been married 37 years, so you matter.
Awesome.
Yeah. So anyways, rehab starts, and I was working my butt just like I always did to try to get it. And they put us back on skis in 6 months. Unlike NFL or anywhere, you know, I had an operation in March, and I was skiing in September in Austria. And so that's pretty early, but I still was pretty gingerly about it, you know, and I was still ranked third. And so I was, you know, the Olympics were coming up, and I couldn't go. And so that's what happened. And so after 84, I turned professional and took that money, got a nice fat contract with a couple of ski companies and bought a new car and started traveling on the circuit. And it was still had great TV deal with ABC, you know, the tour did. And it was enterprising. I made a lot of money professionally, and I made a lot of money from sponsors. So I made a living out of it, you know, and it was a great experience. Travel all over the country, before that, all over the world. In fact, I started modeling clothes in Tokyo and Japan, part of ski wear and sportswear. And so that's what, I guess, back to where you asked me about where the drive came from. Everywhere I went in my sport, I got a new experience, and I was really appreciative of it, you know?
Yeah, no, that's great. So recently in Sun Valley, they debuted a film with Spider Savage. And I'm wondering, and I have no clue about his story. You know, the guy was a rock star for a certain period of time. Yeah. And then at the end, he had...
I wanted to be him.
Yeah, well, a lot of people did. You know, he looked great. Yeah. He was coming down. Yeah. He was charismatic. Yeah. And then he gets together with this wacko chick, and she ends up shooting him and killing
Actress.
Him. Yeah. So it was amazing. But were you skiing about the same time that
No, I'm younger than him. So he was one of the guys I would see on TV that would inspire me, which I told Bob Beatty. I said, "Beast, I don't want to be Spider Man for sure." He's on K2. I remember him because he was on K2s, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't think there'd be any chance I would do that, but that's what I wanted to do. And I was inspired by guys like Spider and, like I said, Joseph Odermatt, different names from the past on TV. But yeah, he was a super cool guy. And I didn't know him. Mark Tache knew him well, because Mark's from Aspen, Kristen Cooper's husband, and who's a friend of mine. I forgot to say that. But he was an Aspen guy. And man, it really was, I guess it was some kind of gut shot to the tour when that happened, you know, because he was a star.
So I want to talk to you about, you know, the name of the show is Finding Your Summit, people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And we've just kind of documented, you know, you're on this great path. You blow out your knee, and then ultimately you make it back and you're in the pro circuit. You were able to support yourself for a number of years, and that all went well. But at some point in time, you know, we all transition out of sports that you just physically, you know, we get older and bones get more creaky and the recovery time is longer and everything else. And so my question to you is, how difficult was that transition coming out of the ski industry into what's next?
I think that I, you know, being in business, a family business my whole life with my parents, and, you know, running a concrete business, and my dad, you know, I basically started running it at 25 years old. So I had a lot of experience for a business to do something past skiing, you know. But I will say that I know how I remembered. I do remember how I ended up ending my career. I was at Bachelor Mountain in Bend, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Wrote a race. I have it on film. It's TV. ESPN was covering the race. And I caught my tip going off one of the bumps. In pro ski racing, they have two man-made bumps. And I caught my tip and got spun around and hit my head and knocked myself out. And that was the scariest thing that ever happened to me. You know, all I thought about was my new son that I had and my wife, and I'm in Oregon and they're back in Michigan. And I don't know what I was thinking, because I'm sure you had concussions in your career. It's a tough injury. You know, it's like you start thinking weird. And I that was pretty much what ended it. And when I flew home after that injury, I was looked at in Green Bay, because that's where I'm near, 100 miles from Green Bay, and there was a neurologist I knew there. It was involved with the Packers. And so I was okay, but I had concussion, post-concussion syndrome. And I went to a couple more races after that, qualified, got made the money to qualify, but I pulled out. So I don't want to do this anymore. And the other biggest factor was my son. When you're traveling a lot on the road, we were gone 4 weeks sometimes at a time. I was gone. Sometimes my wife and the kid would go, son would go, but a lot of time they wouldn't. And when I came home one time after a 4 or 5 week trip, my little guy was in a snowsuit walking down the street. And I went, "Hey, buddy, Nick, how you doing?" And he didn't know who I was. He was scared. And that's when it hit me. I said, you know what? I got to end this stuff right now, because I don't want to get hurt anymore. And I don't want to risk not being there for him. And so that was a big factor. And I don't know if I backtracked too much on that for Mark, but that was vital to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's key. It's just the transition. And it sounds like you had the awakening, you know, from that concussion on it is time to move on. And so, speaking of moving on, I know you've had your hands in some different things. Like you said, you grew up, you know, with kind of a business background from your from your family, from your dad and mom. What are you doing today? Because you used to live in Michigan and the Upper Peninsula, and now I think you find yourself in Florida, which is again about the flattest place on earth you could be.
Yeah, and I love the warm weather. I'd rather be hot than cold. But we still have a home in Michigan. My plan was to get back there, you know, 3 months in the summer, but I've been so busy as a builder and design builder, I haven't gotten back as much. I still go back a few weekends, you know, in July and August, and my wife will be going back. We go back for a wedding, but we have a great house on Lake Michigan. And and so I would say, but I am a Florida boy now for sure. I don't have a desire to be in snow anymore. And I guess because my feet are so shot from my ski boots and my, you know, frostbite at one time or another. And I like to be comfortable. My body, it works a lot better in the heat. I'm sure you feel that when you're going from Sun Valley to somewhere warm.
There's no question about it. I mean, you know, yeah. And so, you know, typically you see a lot of people moving down from New York to Florida. And a lot of people on the West Coast moving to California or Palm Springs or something like that. So there's a reason behind that.
Sure. And that's why I'm here, because there's a lot of development going on. There's so much work. I mean, I've worked every day straight for 4 years, pretty much, you know. Yeah. So I'm just doing it right now to, you know, we had several businesses in Michigan, and we sold our hotel. We had a hotel that we owned for about 20 years. I built that. So I was a developer too, during the skiing career. My father was an engineer, and we did a lot of development together. We built buildings, owned buildings, sold them, you know, condominiums. I built a hotel. My wife and I owned it for 20 years. And in a 10th year of ownership, she wanted to build a spa salon. So I built that inside the hotel, and that was successful. So when we came down to Florida, it was kind of like, let's design, build, not have payroll anymore, have subcontractors, as opposed to Friday signing checks for everybody. Because I met a payroll for 30 years every Friday of the year, and I never wrote myself a check, but yeah, it signed everybody else's paychecks, you know. So, and I'm not complaining about it. It's fine. But eventually I just wanted to have an easier business where I'm just having subcontractors. They take care of their own workman's comp, their own, you know, everything. So payroll tax, all that stuff. And so that's the part of why we're here more often than we are in Michigan. It's a little tougher to do that in Michigan.
So, yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. You're involved in charities from the standpoint of, like I said, we just connected recently in Mississippi. And what has been kind of your drive? Is it, I know we all want to help everybody else, but is it also, I mean, I would imagine a big reason that, you know, whether it's Mooch's charities that he has going on in Michigan, where he comes together to try to raise money to help others, or Steve Azar's down in Mississippi. How much of that stuff do you do per year?
I mean, you could do an event a month if you wanted to, you know, mainly golf. Obviously, skiing, I did the American Ski Classic in Vail for probably 16 years, and I'm from Vail. So I was one of the legends of skiing, and it was a great experience. And so all these events, and I'm sure you know this, Mark, you meet other people, other athletes, maybe other musicians that have a lot, you have a lot in common. I mean, I know John Daly really well. I used to play his event. And John, I've been able to connect John with Steve, John with other people, Steve with other people. That's kind of the thing. It's about the people as much as it is about fundraising, because that's how you make good fundraisers, good people. So, for instance, Steve Mariucci is one of the most compelling speakers I've ever been around. You know, when he comes home for this thing where he's from, and he gets in, it's called the Beacon House, and it's next to the hospital, Marquette General, which is a brand new hospital. And it's a house where folks can stay if they have a family member being sick for a long time, or something, like even for surgery. And he raised money, man. And he's just like a football coach doing it. You know, he's really inspiring. And so that's part of why, you know, these events are so great. There's just great people, you know. So I could do, I try to limit them to 4 or 5 a year now. So, and I don't do skiing anymore. So that's good, because that's a little bit hairier.
Yeah.
you're actually going on skis, and, you know, I've gotten hurt at those pro-ams before. But yeah, I think it's about the people, Mark, more than anything. I'm sure you feel the same way. As you meet folks like you and I met, and yep. you know, you have a lot to experience the same experiences, I guess, you know. One of the first events I did a long time ago was Gino Toretta's in Miami, and that's where I met Steve. And Gino knew everybody, you know, and so his event had a lot of people that had their own events. So I guess that's how kind of I branched out a lot. Jim McMahon was always there, and Jim and I became really close friends. And Jim is a great guy for charity. He'd do anything for the troops. And so you meet interesting people, you know. And so I met Jim, and his son was going to come to college at FGCU, Florida Gulf Coast University, where my son was going for on a golf scholarship. Well, Jim's son was a baseball pitcher. So I said, Jim, if Zach wants to live with Nick, I have a house down there. He can live there. So, you know, Jim's son lived with Nick for a year in college. That's because of the program that I met Jim at a long time ago, but we're very good friends to this day. I mean, he came to my event at Marquette, with Mooch's event. He said, the only reason I'm going to this event is because of you, Mooch, and your sorry ass.
I got an opportunity to why I played against him back in the day, Jim.
Yeah.
I got an opportunity to meet him with Morton Anderson this last year at the Super Bowl. And he's gone through some health issues. And of course, I know Steve Mariucci through Jim Mora. And I had a really fun night with them many years ago down at Jim's event in Atlanta when Jim used to be the head coach of the Falcons. But back to your point, I think, you know, the world of networking, the world of coming together to do something greater is just a wonderful thing. And, you know, back to your point, that's how you and I met, right? Yeah. 2 years ago. Yeah. And then we finally got around to doing this thing.
Sure.
But,
sure.
You know, listen, nothing but success to you. You're living your best life right now. I can tell your positive influence, your positive energy when I've been around you. That's been wonderful. And you know, I totally appreciate you coming on the pod.
You bet. You bet. I like reading about your new ventures, that what you're doing. One thing I wanted to mention, Phil and Steve Mayer's father was the oldest man to summit ever set 1 year back in maybe 20 years ago. Did you aware of that?
I didn't know. No, how old was he?
I don't know. I can't remember because Phil and Steve are my age, are a little older than me. So he must have been, I don't know. What would be, I should have Googled it. I didn't before this.
Yeah, I know. We'll figure that out later. I did, I can tell you this. I was on the climbing expedition party with a guy named Art Muir, who's been on the pod. He was 75 years old. He was the oldest American to ever have climbed Mount Everest. And, you know, I was 59 last year. I turned 60 this year. And it's no picnic to go up. You just don't recover like you used to. And so, you know, good for Art for doing that, getting that accomplishment. And you know, I feel very blessed and fortunate to have actually made it to the top and back down in one piece. So that's
I can appreciate it. I really can. I admire it. So.
Yeah, no. Okay, everybody, there he is. The one, the only, Terry Hola. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.